Jesus Cruz. I'm April Brown. For all of us at Cal State LA, thank you for listening.
To engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individuals of all nations, races, creeds, and colors.
Did you know that KPFK is part of the Pacifica Network? 5 stations around the country powered by our listeners. So on election night, Tuesday, November 5th, the Pacifica Network will bring you live, real-time coverage of the 2024 election results. There'll be updates, analysis, and discussion of this most important election. You're invited to join Pacifica stations as we simultaneously broadcast results on races and ballot initiatives. From 5 p.m. until 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, each station will host a portion of the live coverage. You're invited to join us Tuesday, November 5th, as we bring you live, real-time coverage of the 2024 general election.
Hey, stop the people whom we hate! FBI, the CIA, the whole damn state! 2, 4, 6, 8! Tell the people whom we hate!
FBI, the CIA,
the whole damn state!
2, 4, 6, 8! Tell the people!
You are listening to KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM. That's KPFK Los Angeles 90.7 FM. You tune in to Cut to the Chase. My name is Sylvester Rivers. We're part of a Pacifica Network, as you heard, so be sure to tune in Tuesday for our live election coverage. But right now, we're going to roll with what we have today. Of course, a lot of today's show, Cut to the Chase, we will talk about Proposition 6. We have the author of that proposition is going to be with us in a hot second. We will be talking about the march that took yesterday, the Black People's March that took place in Little Africa or Leimert Park, whichever you like to call it. Then we will be talking about solutions. And then we will be looking at some of the doctors that came to town, doctors, MDs, that went to Gaza and practiced there. Your call-ins, 818-985-5735, hit option 1, and a whole lot more. So, a lot of stuff that we're going to do. So, let's get to it.
Kamala, Kamala, you can't hide.
Kamala, Kamala, you can't hide.
We charge you with genocide.
We charge you with genocide.
So, our first guest... Oh, yeah, they were chanting down everybody, so don't just think they were biased. They were chanting down everybody. First guest is Sam Brown. Sam, are you with us? PC.
Yes, sir.
All right, there
he is. How you doing this morning?
I'm wonderful, man. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
So I got the opportunity to meet you virtually when you were talking about Proposition 6, and you actually authored that. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that's true.
So tell us the backstory, please.
Okay, so peace, everybody. My name is Samuel Nathaniel Brown. I'm the founder and director of the 10P program. And as you heard Brother Sylvester mention, I'm also the original author of Prop 6, meaning that I begun the language for it. It evolved some. I haven't had to come back more than once in order to get to where we are today. But at the end of the day, yes, it started with me writing it while I was serving a life sentence in prison. And I was the first person in the state of California that had to disinfect an office where somebody tested positive for COVID-19. It was a staff member that brought it in. And as a result, it was then passed to the prison population. In the prison at this time, I was the head of a janitorial crew known as healthcare facility maintenance workers. So in the hospital area, being the first person tasked with it in the state to have to do it in a carceral setting, none of us really knew what to expect. We were ill-prepared, definitely not doctors. You know, we incarcerated people who are now faced with this invisible bug that's killing so many people all across the world, from Rome to Spain to New York. And I even seen it touch inside the prison. Like my neighbor, the guy who stayed in the cell next to me, he passed away from COVID. And a couple of other people I knew passed away from COVID. And our 12-man crew eventually went down to to a one-man crew, which was just me, the only person going to work. And at this time, Sylvester, I had an opportunity to go home. I had been in prison for 22 years at this time, and I had a chance to appear before the Board of Parole hearings. And the purpose was for them to assess me on my rehabilitative accomplishments, which means how my ability to demonstrate that I took the necessary classes to change my life and my behaviors and not be the person that I was when I went to prison 22 years prior. And so I'm not to, you know, carry it on forever. I had completed thousands of hours of self-help programming. I had earned 3 college degrees, graduated with honors each time, and I was prepared to go to the board. Had I walked into the board so let me back up some. My supervisors then came and told me that I have to come to work. I can't miss a single day because I asked not to come every day. And when I didn't come to work one day, they threatened me with a 115. A 115 is a rules violation report. It's also known as the modern day whip. And to receive a 115 would have sent me inside of the Board of Parole hearings to receive a 15-year denial. That would have been the punishment I got. So all of the rehabilitative accomplishments would have been thrown out. All of the college, everything would have been thrown out. And that's what involuntary servitude and slavery looks like today. It looks like forced labor over rehabilitation. So that was the origins.
Wow. So Proposition 6, let me just explain to people. Proposition 6 says, I was a little distracted, but I don't think we really said what it is. It tells, the voter says, then you cannot be forced to work in prison, because the 13th Amendment of the United States says slavery is abolished except under punishment of a crime. So you were in there and realized that you did work, but it's very minimal wages, correct?
Correct. Sometimes it's no wages at all. It's small wages.
But you're forced to work. And then if you didn't, then they would have gave you the C, 13, which means that you'd get more time.
Yeah, the CDCR 115. Which would basically extend my time in prison. And it costs taxpayers $134,000 a year. So you have somebody like me, Sylvester, that's rehabilitated, but I'll be denied the opportunity to come home if I don't report to work one day.
And so you actually wrote the legislation while you were in prison or when you got out?
No, I wrote it while I was incarcerated.
Mm. So how did you learn those skills? Because right now I'm asking people to write in a different proposition. Nobody knows what to do. I might have to ask you to do that.
Well, that's a discussion we can have, man.
Okay.
You know, it comes with the territory when you become accustomed to standing up for your rights. You can only get kicked around so much. And inside the prison system, many people go to prison. They go through the courtrooms, not understanding the language that's being spoken around them. So I had to file a number of 602s and appeals and stuff while I was in prison. Plus, I read a lot. So that enabled me to learn a little bit more about the law and go do my research. Hmm.
So you wrote the, and then how did you get it on the ballot?
So my then partner, Jamelia, she received what I sent to her out of the mail from the prison. She shopped it in the Capitol. She went and spoke to different legislators, and Assemblymember Sidney Comlager then picked it up, and it became Assembly Constitutional Amendment 3, or ACA 3.
Beautiful. So now it's going to be on the ballot. It's Proposition 6, and basically it says that constitutional amendment, the Prop 13, that abolishes slavery, is no longer can no longer be valid in California.
Yeah, basically what it's saying is, thank you for that. The 13th Amendment of the Federal Constitution. In Article 1, Section 6 of the California Constitution, is just as you says. It says involuntary servitude and slavery are prohibited except as punishment for a crime. So that means slavery never ended. It was just placed behind the walls. And today, it takes precedence over rehabilitating people and sending them back to society better than when they went. So it's not conducive to public safety, and it's not in the benefit of crime survivors, crime victims, nor the people who are supposed to be getting the help that they need. So Prop 6 changes that. So that's why we're trying to get as many people to go out and vote right now. Yes on Prop 6, because the polls say it's down. But we believe all our people are going to come out in droves. Everybody going to show up and end slavery once for all in California.
But it makes no sense that it's down. But here's another aspect of that. But you're out now. You are out, correct?
100%. January, we'll make 3 years.
Yes.
December 20th, actually.
Fantastic. So here's the other downsides of that. While you were locked down, they used prisoners to do labels. And what different corporations benefited from that, correct?
A lot of corporations benefit from prison labor. That's why it's important for us to vote yes on Prop 6 so that we can stop giving them incentive to want to destroy our companies. Destroy our communities. You have so many companies that use prison labor that you utilize every day and probably aren't even aware. Just to name a few, Nintendo, 3M, Walmart, Target, Victoria's Secrets, American Airlines, Avis Car Rental, Fidelity Investments, Wendy's, In-N-Out Burger, Starbucks, all use prison labor. And the list goes on and on. Lens Crafters, it goes on and on. And many people don't know that. And some of these places will use prison labor while you're incarcerated, but then when you get out, won't even hire you at their offices or their corporations.
Wow. So they're using the labor. They're not reducing their prices or anything.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then I understand that sometimes when you call customer services, those are prisoners. Is that correct, too?
Yeah, you'll be surprised. Sometimes you'll call a company, think that you're speaking to a customer service representative that might be in the Philippines or Thailand or somewhere outsourced, but it's really what they call insourcing. That company would be in hire of somebody that's working at prisons. These women would be in like Folsom State Prison or Child Chiller Prison or a federal prison serving as customer service reps, and you have no idea.
Mm. Okay, that, my friends, is Sam Brown, Proposition 6. If we're going to go to some other things, but I don't know if you want to stay on the line. If callers come later on in the show, they can talk to Sam and other issues that we're having. The number to call is 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, and hit option 1 to talk on the air. We will take your calls later in the show. If you want to stay, I don't know if you have time, but you can hang in there and listen to the show. If they have calls for you, that we may or may not have calls for you.
Thank you very much, Sylvester.
Man, you're welcome. Thank you for what you've done. And you know, this whole economic system that we're dealing with is about money, and how they can get cheap labor. There's a thing called Slavery by Another Name, which is a couple of documentaries and movies that I saw, and that's basically after the emancipation. They used laws to put people in prison and force them to do labor.
That's right. So we definitely encourage everybody to please get out and vote today, tomorrow, Tuesday. You know what I'm saying? Get out and vote. Yes on Prop 6. Yes on Prop 6.
That's Sam Brown. He might be with us if you call in 818 after the at the end of the program.
That's right.
Okay, so did we talk about, we said that this Tuesday, KPFK will be having election coverage. So it's a whole Pacifica network collaboration. So tune in starting at 5 p.m. for the Pacifica station's coverage of the 2024 elections. Each station will have their own say on it. Also, over the weekend was the Black People's March in Leimert Park. The Black People's March in Leimert Park. We're marching for justice and equity and all kinds of beautiful things that are not happening right now. So, Natalie Matos, I hope I get her name right, was one of the, I talked to her. She was there at the march at Leimert Park, and she will give, something's coming up, so let me hit this real quick. Hold on there, y'all. Here we go.
My name is Natalie Matos. I am in a local group called Black Autonomy, and I'm one of the co-founders of Black Lantern Books here in South LA.
And you're promoting an event coming up on
November 9th. So we will be at Chaos Network at 4343 Limerick Boulevard, right across from the park. And we'll be welcoming Sharon Schoetz and Russell Schoetz III, children of Russell Maroon Schoetz, the Black Panther Party member, Black Liberation Army political prisoner, in welcoming them for a book launch on a memoir of Maroon Schoetz called I Am Maroon. It is not to be missed. Of course, we want to make sure to welcome them and show them that their father meant a lot for all of us in the Black Liberation Movement, but as well, just generally all of us who are fighting every day to survive in a system that is not always making the most for us, so we have to show up and support each other.
So tell us about the Maroon, Russell.
Yeah, so Russell, he's an ancestor. Russell Schoetz was a political prisoner. He, in his youth, he was very active in the Black Panther Party, and out of Philly, his children were raised without their father, which is why this book is so important to them. It doesn't just give them an opportunity to get to know their father, but also lets us all know a story of a lifelong revolutionary who became a political prisoner and constantly, and I say constantly, broke out of prison. Because he meant it when he said, oh, we're all going to be free today. The amount of times that he jumped out of prison is why they call him Maroon. He just refused to be governable. And he was a true revolutionary in the sense that not only was he fighting for his general community often, he was also fighting for Black liberation at large. And that included finding ways out of the system that are constantly trying to keep us down.
When did he make his transition?
So in 2020, he passed due to COVID, and he'd been incarcerated for many years at this point and had been put in solitary confinement as well. And he was, even as he got coronavirus, he and other folks were still fighting to be released for medical needs. Mm-hmm.
And the book he wrote while he was in prison?
So this is a memoir. It's compiled of stories that he wrote of himself, but also other people wrote of him. So on the cover, it says, Kanya Dalmeida is one of the writers, but actually this is a culmination of stories on the true story of an American political prisoner.
So you have the book launching, is that what's on November the 9th?
Yeah.
At the Chaos Network, which is at 4343 Limerick Boulevard.
Yes, yes. Hope you can make it. It's a free event. We want to make sure that the community shows up and says, hey, we love you, we see you, and, you know, we appreciate all the work that your father did for us to pave the road for what will ultimately be our liberation.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
CIA, the whole damn state! 4, 6, 8. Tell the people who we hate. FBI, CIA, the whole damn state.
Come on.
2, 4, 6, 8. Tell the people who we hate. The FBI, the CIA.
And everybody, the whole damn state, they're chanting at the, that was yesterday at the African People's March. It was held by the African People's Socialist Party, which also represent the Uhuru Three who were victims of the American judicial system. They were exonerated from one count, but then they were also charged with another count. So they're going to be sentenced, I believe, in December. And one of the Uhuru Three was there, Jesse Neville. He was there. He is a white person who helps, understands the need to help out all causes, including the black cause. that was very, it was great. The Black People's March. And it wasn't just black people. It was all people who understand justice, equality is for everybody. If one man is not free, none of us is free. If everybody's free, then yes, of course, we're all free. So that's what was going on at the march yesterday. Yes. Yeah, so then, let's keep going here. So we talked to Sam Brown. He wrote some legislation. I just wanted to mention this because at the march yesterday, it was mentioned that alternatives, and I've said this before on this program, and we really have to think of ways to free ourselves, be liberated from this madness that's going on. There's war. People are telling me who my enemy is. They're saying, I know who my enemy is and who it isn't. Russia is not my enemy. Cuba is not my enemy. Venezuela is not my enemy. Iran is not my enemy. But they're telling me they're my enemies. But, you know, why is that? Because basically, they want to exploit these countries economically. It's all about U.S. American expansionism around the world. So we're in this situation where we're fighting each other. People are telling the truth. People are accusing them of being, oh, you're just a MAGA supporter. No, you're just telling the truth. I'm not supporting MAGA. You're not supporting MAGA. You're just telling the truth because you have compassion for other people because you see what's going on. So do what is necessary. One of the things that I suggested that we do is I'm going to talk to Brother Sam Brown about this, is getting ranked choice voting on our ballots in California. Right now, my vote in California doesn't really mean anything because of the Electoral College. So a state as huge as California has as much weight in the Senate as Rhode Island. And we have maybe, 20 times the population. But yet one vote here is worth, my one little vote is worth 100 of theirs. Because if they win the state decides who are the Senate. You only have two senators from each state. So, you know, the Electoral College negates my vote. Remember that in the past several elections, the popular vote was not the winner of the election, when the Republicans got in, that is. So that's one solution. Let's get ranked choice voting going. Another one is, if a third party gets 5% of the vote, then on the next election cycle, they will get matching funds of up to $28 million. They'll be in the game. Because right now we're seeing billionaires funding all this stuff. Just funding, you know. $1 million if you vote, says Elon Musk, or whatever crazy pop proposition he has. And we have to get rid of Citizens United. Money is not speech, y'all. Come on. So those are the things I suggest. And those for you who are attacking people for saying we can't support genocide, stop it. Attack the people who are going to lose the election for you, who refuse to say that 20% of the population feels that if it was said that there would be a ceasefire or arms embargo, your candidate would win easily. But they refuse to do it, ignoring you. Well, let's wait till the next 4 years. We've been doing this for decades. Come on, y'all, stop it. Let's win this war. Let's win it. Let's win it. Do what you have to do. If you're in a swing state, vote for who you have to vote for to live another day. But let's quit fighting each other and lying about each other, because there is a genocide going on. What, you know, it reminds me back when we were enslaved. Could you imagine people saying, "Well, you know, it doesn't, you know, as long as you know, we keep enslavement going, because." It's not affecting me right now, and you know, this president or that president is going to be better. So, yeah, forget. So it's the brainwashing of me-ism and not we-ism. Me-ism makes you think, well, you know, it's just them over there. I'm safe now, and I want my kids to be. No, no, stop it. If one man is not free, nobody is free. So it's a shame that people have no compassion for other people. They didn't have compassion for my ancestors. They said they're the others. So it was easy for them to kill us. Easy. That's why it's easy for them to kill the Palestinians. It's easy because they're the others. They're animals. They're not real. And they said when we're shut down in the street today in America, when they're creating a cop city that is going to be those police trained by, yes, the IDF. Anyway, So there was a group of doctors that came to Los Angeles, and they decided to tell their story of what was going on in Gaza. So I was fortunate enough to be able to record them. So let's go to what some of the doctors said. This one, the first one's Dr. Ahmed Abdin.
My inspiration and my whole story started when I was 14 years old. I was 14 years old. This is my young brother. This is my twin. This is my soulmate. This is my best friend. This is my everything. He's my motivation. He's my positive energy. He is everything for me. I put this picture and this picture in front of my desk while I'm studying, while I was studying 7 years in Egypt and graduated first of my college. And then while I was in the war, just in the nights of the shifts, during like long shifts, more than 5 days continuously at the hospital, working tirelessly, dealing with flesh, dealing with pieces, dealing with part of bodies, I was putting this picture in front of my eyes that I need to do something, even if I still just started their neurosurgery residency, but I need to do what I can do. He died in 2010 in a car accident in front of my eyes. Yeah, we were together. He died in front of my eyes. I couldn't save him. I saw him bleeding. I saw him bleeding from every orifice, from his face, from his eyes, from his ears, from everywhere. We took him to the hospital. He needed an urgent surgery in the neurosurgery specialty called decompressive craniectomy because he had huge epidural and subdural hematomas, and he needed an urgent surgery at that time because his Glasgow-Coma scale was dropping the conscious level was dropping too fast. So he needed that surgery urgent. But at that time in 2010, we didn't have good neurosurgeons at Gaza, and we didn't have the good resources at the hospital. He went to Nasser Medical Complex. I think most of you know Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, who the occupation invaded it and destroyed it completely. He went there, but after the CT done and after everything done, I was 14 years old. I didn't know anything about medicine. He passed away after 15 days in the ICU on the intubation and on the mechanical ventilator. After he died, I made a promise with myself. I said with myself and with Allah, with God. I said for him, I want to be a doctor. I want to go to medical school, even if it's difficult for us because it needs a lot of money to go to medical school, and it needs high score in our high school degree. But I told myself, I will do it, inshallah. I will do it. I will achieve my goal just to save cases similar to my brother case, just not to no one lose anyone who love as I love so much my brother. So I tried my best. I did a lot of surgeries similar to my brother case, decompressive craniectomy, at which we just remove part of the skull to evacuate the hematoma, to release the pressure on the brain, and just to try to rescue the brain from being damaged by the compression. I did a lot of surgeries, like similar surgery that my brother needed. I made it in this war, in this genocide, for our civilians, for our children. Can you move? Yeah, this is when I graduated. When I graduated in Egypt from Ain Shams University, it's a medical governmental hospital and school. This is my mom. I wanted just to put this picture because I couldn't put the picture of my mom now, because she lost 25 kilograms. She is malnourished. She is like in malnourished syndrome because no proteinous resources there. 6 months I lived with my family in the war. We didn't eat any chicken. We didn't eat any meat. We didn't eat any like fruits, any desserts. No, nothing. We just had canned food, some vegetables from our farms, from our lands, and we were rescued. Put ourselves in danger to go to like to our lands to get some like vegetables from the lands, because our lands were like on the siege between us and Israeli side. So my mom was in good health. Me, I was in good health. When I evacuated from Gaza, I lost 12 kilograms. I couldn't eat. I went to psychiatry to treat myself from what I saw, from what I dealt with, because it's unimaginable. Even if I still talking for hours and for days, I cannot express what is inside my heart. Because one case, when I was doing my shifts in the European Gaza Hospital, I never forget this case, because I was covering the neurosurgery cases in the emergency department. So I was dealing with the cases once they arrive at the emergency department. One case, she's from a Sha'ar family, which is a known family in Gaza, in Khan Yunis. They destroyed their home on their heads. She came with some of her family members. She was, when she arrived to the hospital, she was half of the body. We didn't find the lower half of her body. We rushed after we stabilized, like in the emergency department, the vascular surgeon and the orthopedic team, they like tourniquet the vessels and everything until we reached to the emergency to the operation room. And she also had a decompressive a depressed fracture with epidural hematoma. She also needed a decompressive craniectomy at the head. We rushed to the surgery for her. We saved her life. She lived with half of her body, only the upper half. But the tragedy in this story that I never forget is not that she saved with upper half of her body. The tragedy is like a couple of hours after searching for the rest of her family, her sister arrived in an ambulance in a blanket. When I opened the blanket, I found the other lower half of the sister that we saved. Her sister was... she didn't lost any part of her body, but because they saved her life after like a couple of hours under the rubble, she died. Her sister died, her mom died, but we buried her lower half of her body with her sister.
Well, I think I'm gonna act so fat like a farmer, you know what I mean?
Your bullets, machine gun. So that was Dr. Ahmed Abdin. He's a neurosurgeon who was in Gaza talking about his experience and what's going on there with the Nazi-like IDF doing what they do. They kill people. Because they're animals, like they put on us here, and us being the descendants of African, the melanated people. They demonize us. They do everything to make us not to seem as intelligent. That was going on. You're not as intelligent. You're not this, that. And so they commit genocide against you. And we refuse to say no, no, no. So I talked to a young lady who was listening to the doctors, and I'll play her now. We're in Los Angeles. It's Saturday, November 2nd. What's your name?
Thistle.
By the name of Thistle is in the audience. Why did you come?
I think it's important to educate yourself and to stay aware and to stay in solidarity with the community, and that means engaging with the community. And I think it's also a give and take. These doctors are here to give us very important, valuable firsthand experience, and we should listen to them and listen to their experience. And we should also give them our solidarity and our appreciation for the support that they're giving the people of Palestine. And we should all motivate each other to work towards a better world for everyone, and that includes the people in Gaza. So I'm here to learn, and I'm here to find community and solidarity.
Thank you so much. But you, when you first talked to you, you said you're very emotional, and you are an emotional person because, well, just your aura now is like sad. Well, not sad, but how would you explain what you're going through?
It's hard for me to even think about what's going on in the world without crying. And I think that's because I really see a lot of beauty in the human experience, and the idea that we're taking that for granted and that so many people take that for granted. And you can never undo all of the harm that's been done. It's very troubling to me. We only have this one life, and I personally value my life and my friends' lives and my family and our dignity very much.
Young lady by the name of Thistle. Oh, my, tears were rolling from her eyes before the program even started. She has concern because she has compassion for other people. But, you know, let's not worry about genocide. We need to know, like, right now we have to, you know, do what we have to do. But we have to change what's going on. We have to do that by whatever tactic you use. But if somebody's on your side, don't attack them. Understand and do what we have to do to win this. 818-985-5735. If you want to call in and comment on the doctors, I'm going to play another doctor. Our guest, 818-985-5735. The phone lines are open as we continue with our program. Attack, this is Pacifica Radio, by the way. And at the I said yesterday, the reason I'm still here is because I'm not censored. I'm not censored. I've been gotten suggestions, but sometimes I don't agree with those suggestions, so I don't do them. There's other great programs on this station. I heard something yesterday. It goes to the archives, kpfk.org/archives. I think it was 11 o'clock. The manager, Michael Novick, said he put it up. Really good, talking about how they try to portray something, disinformation, just out lies. So that was yesterday at 11. Go to the archives and check it out. And that's how they can perpetuate the justification for what they do. 818-985-5735. Yes, check it out. Yeah. are listening to KPFK Los Angeles. We have a caller on the line. I forgot what. Hold on, let me hit this. I think I had it right here.
Hi, this is John and Ventura. What?
John and Ventura. On? Go ahead.
Hi, this is John and Ventura, and I have been observing, and the video footage, and I have been studying the history. Norman Finkelstein is my hero and the expert author on the subject. There is no October 7th. There is 76 years of slow genocide and apartheid. And any congressman who participates in this by giving them weapons or money is guilty of genocide. Anyone who commits, incites, or aids and abets in genocide is guilty of genocide. And there is no statute of limitation for this war crime. And I encourage all of your listeners to solicit an arrest warrant from The Hague, from the ICJ, for the arrest of any criminal U.S. politician who voted yes for weapons and money in Gaza. They're all war criminals. There's nothing human about the Israelis. They are Nazis. Nothing better. Nothing better. There is no difference. I encourage you all to make that call, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your comments. So he says there are war criminals, and we see it. I mean, it's really sad what's going on. We have to make these choices that, you know, supposedly will keep us going for another 4 years and not keep us going for another 4 years. But the lies are coming from both sides, I will say that. I gave you some tactics. 818-985-5735 is the number to call if you would like to. Talk to our earlier guest. I think he's still with us. If you'd like to comment on the doctors, I'm going to play another doctor in 1 second.
Beside his recent mission to Gaza, he has been to the West Bank twice for surgical missions in the past with the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. Please welcome Dr. Khan.
First, thanks for having us. I'll just kind of give you guys a little bit about my trip. So, as she mentioned, I'm a hand surgeon. During my training, I went to the West Bank twice as a resident, and both times I went in 2016 and again in 2019. I actually wanted to go to Gaza, and they're always like, "There's no way you can get inside Gaza. It's just impossible." So you know, after October 7th, like all of you, you know, we're always just wondering like, what else can we do? How can we help? And I just had this opportunity fall in my lap where one of the founders of Humanity Auxilium, Dr. Fozia Alvi, actually reached out to me and said, "Hey, we're sending a team to Gaza. We need a hand surgeon." And I was like, you know, Allahu Akbar, I'm in, you know. and I was surprised that she can get us in during this genocide. But we got all the approval. Everything went through. I applied in February, got the approval in late March, and I was able to go from April 1st to April 11th, which was very special, a special time for us because it's also during Ramadan. So I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but you know, we fast 30 days of Ramadan, and we were there the last 10 nights of Ramadan, which were actually even extra special for us. So it was a very special time for us to be there. We flew into Cairo, went through the Cairo security. You know, they went through a lot of our stuff. You know, we were very fortunate in that we got everything through. You know, they always tell you, you know, when you leave the country, you declare your cash. But when you arrive in like some third world countries, you don't always declare your cash because they're going to take it from you. You know, so when we left the United States, no issues. We told them how much, you know, we had a lot of donations, so we all were carrying like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on us. But they said, when you get to Egypt, don't tell anybody you have money. So we had to, like, you know, we felt like drug dealers, but we had to, like, sneak through security. Like, we didn't sneak through it. They looked through all of our stuff, but they didn't look through us. So we were able to just fill our pockets with cash, and thank God we were able to get that money into Gaza. But so we arrived to Cairo, and we stayed in Cairo for a day, and then the next morning went to Gaza, and you know, the drive there, even just the drive there, you start to already see like what's happening. You see the miles and miles of like the aid trucks, you know, and the drive there took like 6-7 hours. So, you know, there was hours and hours of us just passing up aid trucks that just weren't getting in. So even before you get to Gaza, you start to see what's happening in Gaza, if you know what I'm saying. We got there, again, had to go to the Egyptian side, and then we finally got to the Palestinian side, and that's when we got in, and we saw that sign that said, I love Gaza, and we were finally there, you know? And once you get in, you immediately hear the drones, and like from the moment you enter to the moment you leave, you're just hearing the drones nonstop your entire time there. But seeing that sign, we were finally like, wow, you know, like we're finally here, we can finally do something. Unfortunately, you guys saw that the I Love Gaza sign was actually destroyed by the IDF, you know, when they took over the Rafah crossing. So we got there, and, you know, it was kind of scary because before we got there, they're like, whatever you do, don't travel at night. You know, so we got to the border, and everything was moving slow, so we had to travel at night. And I'm sure you guys will remember, but the World Health Kitchen, you know, they were actually in the line with us. Like, they were there with us, and they probably left like 30, 45 minutes before we did. And we didn't hear about what happened to them until the next day. And that's when we really realized, like, wow, we're not safe, you know? Like, God, they'll kill anybody, you know? You kind of go there thinking, I'm an American citizen. They're not going to do anything to me, you know? But they killed some Europeans and an American citizen, and, you know, and, I mean, to be frank, they killed white people, you know? So, you know, like, us thinking we're safe just because we're Muslims or just because we're American citizens, like, that was completely, like, out the window at that point. So we got to the hospital that night. You know, when we drove, like I said, we were driving at night. So we didn't get to see anything, but you can kind of, we kind of felt that we were just driving over rubble. All the electricity was out, so we couldn't see anything. Got to the hospital, and immediately, like, the hospital is a small, you know, 100, 150 bed hospital, but it was like a city. It was like just full of people. There was nowhere to like stand or sit, just because everyone was there in the hospital compound because it's just supposed to be a safe space. So we got there, and that night, like I said, it was Ramadan. So when we got there, all the physicians were actually praying their night prayers. And then we were able to sit with the doctors there and just listen to everybody's story. You know, everybody there has lost somebody or has some scar from this, not even just from this genocide, just from even before. So even before this genocide, everybody has a story, you know. That night, we met with the director of the hospital, and when we got there, I noticed he was sitting really funny. And I was just like, oh, it looks like he has a like back problem or something. And they told us that his house was actually, his house was attacked like a week prior, and he lost his daughters and he lost his wife. And from the explosion, he got thrown and hit the wall and actually hurt his back. But a week later, you know, he was back in the hospital. And when I was there, it was April. You know, the war started in October. And from October to then, like, none of them have been paid. None of them have, you know, got any of their wages or salary. They were just working because they're just like, we have to help our people. And that was, you know, that was probably the one thing that I think when we left, we're like, man, this is a very, very special group of people here in Gaza, you know? And I think Khalil will talk about this later, because I met Khalil when I was there, and he actually said something that, you know, Gaza has been under siege for decades. And that siege really prepared them for this genocide. You know, they were cut off from the world. The surrounding Arab countries basically turned their backs on them. So, you know, what they realize is, like, we have to rely on ourselves and we have to rely on God. And that's, you'll hear that from all of them. They say, like, we don't need anybody, we have God on our side. So that siege prepared them for this war. And it just built that resilience in them that they were able to, you know, put up this fight and, you know, fight back against the Israelis. You know, our time there, like I said, I'm a hand surgeon, so my time was always in the operating room. You know, for me, people who make it to the operating room, you know, they're the ones who survived. So the people in the ER, you know, there's lots of patients that came through the ER that I didn't get to see, but the stuff I saw was 75% of my patients were children, and all of them were shot in the arm or the leg. You know, obviously the ones that are being shot in the head, which the IDF, that's a very known tactic of theirs, that they didn't survive. But we noticed that they were shooting kids in the arms and the legs, and it was very clear that was intentional. And they're just trying to disable this entire generation of Palestinians. My very, very first patient was an 8-year-old girl, and it really stuck with me because my daughter's 8. And it was her and her four sisters playing outside. And I got shot, all four of them got shot by some type of Israeli drone. So, you know, it wasn't collateral damage, it wasn't shrapnel from an explosion, it was like targeted shootings of four children. One of the sisters did not survive. Two sisters got shot in the leg. Both of them needed emergency surgery. One of them actually had to have their artery reconstructed. And then the one patient I saw was the 8-year-old girl. She got shot in her right arm, and it completely destroyed her arm. Like, you know, when you see like bullet wounds, you know, I trained in Detroit. We saw bullet wounds all the time, small, you know, entry exit wounds. This whatever they shot her with, the caliber bullet, you know, they're really trying to cause maximum damage. You know, like these bullets, like we took out bullets from some kids. They're massive bullets. And unfortunately, we couldn't save her arm. You know, it destroyed the bone, the tendons, the arteries, the nerves. So we had to do an amputation. You know, I always kind of wonder what happened to her. And I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with Khaled Beydoun. He's a social media activist. But, you know, months later, he actually posted a picture of her smiling. So it was really, she was wearing the same exact clothes from the day of the surgery. So it just shows you what little they have. But that was, you know, that was a very eye-opening experience in the sense that, you know, we finally saw firsthand that, like, what they're doing on the ground. You know, like you said, they lie about everything, but what they say never gets questioned. It's just taken as fact by the media and the U.S. government. But everything the Palestinians say is always kind of linked. Oh, you know, Hamas linked. You know, Ministry of Health claims so and so. You know, and they do that just to kind of add some doubt to it. You know, aside from that, what a lot of people don't see in the healthcare system is, you know, what we see the videos of. We see videos of the gunshot wounds, the explosions. What people aren't seeing and what we saw when we were there was the fact that the healthcare system is completely overburdened and overrun. They're way above capacity. It's such a massive burden on the healthcare system. You know, the patients there are malnutritioned. They're not getting the calories they need. There is a massive infection rate there. When we were there, we were looking at some of the numbers, like half of the patients there are getting infected. So one of the OR rooms per day is just washing out infections all day. And you can imagine that takes away resources from the acute trauma that's happening. And then there's a post-op pain. You know, they can't keep their pain under control. So when you're sleeping at night, you can hear people screaming like throughout the hospital. They're just in pain, you know, and there's nothing, unfortunately, there's nothing they can give them besides some, like, Tylenol or some Motrin. You know, but despite all this, like, when you meet the people of Gaza, like, you leave there, and you're, like, we left there, and I was just like, they're going to win this war. Like, they are absolutely going to win this war, you know. You know, this siege has prepared them, and they just have such trust in God, and all of them say, victory is coming, we just have to be patient.
And that was Dr. Jawed Khan talking about his experience in Gaza. So, I'd like to thank all you people who subscribe to KPFK. Our calls are open now. Our phones are open if you want to call in, 818-985-5735 for the last few minutes that we have. 818-985-5735. Hit option one. We have to thank everybody that... thank Gary Baca for helping me. Maybe you can grab this line, too.
Yeah.
Grab this line. So I want to... Gary also gave me these clips I want to play as we are. Hold on, Colin. I want to play this clip right here. Here we go.
She vowed to ban fracking. She wants the government to stop people from eating red meat. She wants to get rid of your cows. No more cows.
No more cows? Really? I mean, Trump makes up stuff all the time about how Harris is going to ban this or that. No more guns, no more cars. But cows? How exactly would that work? And by the way, this was a rally in Atlanta, the sixth biggest metro area in the United States. Trump is telling an audience of city dwellers that Harris is going to, quote, get rid of your cows. Smart. Again, this is an example of Trump taking an argument that could be effective, that Harris is a rabid environmentalist, and she's going to ban fracking. But Trump finds a way to push that lie one step further to the point where it's obviously ridiculous. So let's move on to number 8. This is from a town hall that Trump did on August 29th in La Crosse, Wisconsin. It starts with a question from a Trump supporter, former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard.
What's going to happen if Kamala Harris institutes price controls?
So that's a communist plan. It's never worked. And it's been tried by others. Believe it or not, Richard Nixon tried it. A lot of people tried it.
Okay, first of all,
the stupidity of this, calling it communism. And there are price controls in the United States already because it's the corporations who charge, do inflation. It's the corporations who do inflation. Where are we at here? Thank you. The corporations, let me say that again, the corporations cause inflation. There are some states that have price controls, but they just don't, they are there on the books, but they don't enforce them. So that's what's going on. We have a call. Sophia, I pressed this one number 9. Let me see. Sophia's on line 1. Sophia.
Hi,
how are you?
Yes, I'm good. How are you? I just wanted to thank the doctors for sharing their stories. They were unbelievable to hear and so important to hear. I mean, the doctor who described, I joined your show a little bit late, I believe he was a neurosurgeon who trained in Egypt, and he saved the woman who half of her body had been blown off.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing to hear. It's just unbelievable to hear these types of injuries on air, on radio.
Yeah.
And you know, every time, you know, on the news, when the mainstream news will maybe just maybe hint that there's some sort of genocide going on, and they will say, well, these pictures are too graphic to show, it drives me nuts. It's like, you guys are freaking complicit in this genocide, and you cannot bear to show the pictures that you are creating.
Thank you so much.
So at least on air, we hear these doctors. And to the last doctor, 100% agree with you. The Palestinians will win. There's no question about that.
All right.
I do think that here in the United States, we need to get a little bit more uncomfortable. I am also a doctor. Been trying to go to Gaza, but it's not a specialty. My specialty is not one that's needed there. But I think we all have to step up our methods of activism, and we do need to get a little bit more uncomfortable here in those methods of activism.
Thank you.
To really help the people.
Thank you so much, Sophia. We have one time maybe for half a call, if there's such a thing. Carlos and Carson, what's going on?
Yeah, good morning. It grieves me terribly what's happening to the Palestinians, but very quickly, Israeli Zionist politics have been usurped by a very diabolical philosophy, which is called Frankism.
You got about 1 minute. Go ahead.
Frankism from Jacob Frank and Sabbatai Zvi, who declared himself the Messiah back in the 1600s, has taken over their politics. And basically the philosophy is you achieve holiness through sin. In other words, the more people you kill, the holier you will become. There's a book called, written by a rabbi himself, To Eliminate the Opiate.
You got 30 seconds.
It goes into this movement, okay? It goes into this movement, and that explains the atrocities committed in the Gaza Strip with no compunction, with no remorse by the Zionist Israelis. Anyway, thank you very much for letting me on the air. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in so much. Okay, that's concludings. I like that. Can I make that word, concluding? Okay, thank you.
That's a word.
That's a new word.
Nazi.
Oh, Lord. So that concludes our show. This is Cut to the Chase. My name is Sylvester Rivers. We have a live, ongoing coverage of the elections this Tuesday starting at 5 o'clock. All the Pacifica stations, 4 of them, will take part. So be sure to tune in to this station, and you will get all the other stations. Actually, it's going through the New York stations. So that's it for me. I'm going to make way. Thank you, Gary, for your help, and audiences, for those of you who subscribe. Thank you so much. And for those who You who did not, you can go online and subscribe, kpfk.org, hear past programs. I'm out.